And now for a segment called Just Something I've Noticed, brought to you by our friends at Motel 6. Just something I've noticed. Bargain hunting is back. I mean, bargain hunting's always been around. We always love a great deal. But man, everywhere you look, people are bargain hunting. You know, there's so many great ways to find great deals. Hey, I have a great find in your bargain hunting journey. Book online at motel6.com. Use the code CPRedEye to get 15% off your stay at Motel 6 or Studio 6. With almost 1,500 locations across the country, there's almost always a Motel 6 or Studio 6 nearby, and truck parking is available at most locations. Enjoy a clean, comfortable room at a price that's a real bargain when you use the code CPRedEye. That's the letters CPRedEye, all one word, for 15% off your stay at Motel6.com. That is a bargain. That's just something I've noticed. Brought to you by Motel 6.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. The key is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. This is Friday. It's just begun. Let's venture into it together. Gary, how are you?
Good. Let's play this audio cut to start off the show. Okay. Here we go. And it is Mr. Biden speaking yesterday.
But all of a sudden, blue-collar workers, all the guys I grew up with in Claymont and Scranton, they vote Republican? Not a joke. What's happened? I think a lot of because they don't think we care.
Because you don't.
Because you don't.
That's why you killed tens of thousands of union jobs for no reason at all.
Why don't you tell them they should go learn to code?
Right. I mean, it's just here's the beautiful thing. There's no self-awareness as he identifies the problem.
Yeah. We don't know why they're voting Republican. It's not a joke. No, you're right. It's very serious. They take their livelihood very seriously, and you don't.
Oh, my. I just burst out laughing. I'm sorry when I saw that one yesterday. It's just like, well, yeah, because you're killing your... And this is the other thing, too, with the president yesterday, because you had even mentioned to me in our pre-show meeting how he was talking about manufacturing again. It's like... Everyone knows. It's obvious. There is no debate. Democrats wish to kill manufacturing because manufacturing creates global warming gases and they want them gone.
Right.
And yesterday, you know, we had talked about the problem. You know, the GDP numbers came out, which were positive, which they expected. Mm. But every other number showing what's going to happen in the next couple of months, horrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
absolutely horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And manufacturing, the president the other day was talking about, you know, manufacturing, you know, that it's great and it's horrible, right? I mean, we still have manufacturing in this country, but it's going in the opposite direction that it should be going in. And the fact is the Democrats on one, they want to play. And I guess a lot of blue collar workers have figured it out. You're saying one thing and you're doing another.
Right. You don't care about our jobs. Your party doesn't care about our jobs. In fact, it's part of your platform to destroy our jobs.
Well, they care about our jobs as they're destroying the jobs. So, I don't know.
They say they care about the jobs, but so, their platform, it forces them, not forces them, they chose this. Their platform demonstrates clearly that they don't care about the jobs. Go learn to code.
If I did acid, would I be able to understand the mindset better?
No, because you would probably have clearer thinking. You'd be going in the opposite direction. You'd be sitting around going, wait, 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 wait,
by the way, for those under the age of 60.
Acid.
Acid is LSD. So that's.
And for those under the age of 90, LSD, basically mushrooms.
Yes, yes. No, in Colorado, shrooms.
Yeah.
But I said that because I always think, I go, wow, just for a day, I'd like to get into the mind of a liberal so you could experience it, to see what it's like.
That's my nightmare. I'm trying to avoid that.
Well, that's that, and so when that thought went through my head, then the next one was, well, maybe better just to do acid and then try to figure them out, because it just nothing makes any kind of sense. I mean, it's just, you know, when Biden says, you know, stuff like that, it's like, they don't think Democrats care. No, they know Democrats don't care. You want the example? The Keystone Pipeline. You killed tens of thousands of the best union jobs.
Yeah.
Of the best union jobs, you killed them and said, hey, go learn to code.
Yep.
There was no compassion. There wasn't a reason to do it, even based on the bogus mindset of Democrats, because your Secretary of Transportation, your climate czar, your energy secretary all told you or said afterwards, oh, no, it was the wrong thing to do. It's actually the worst thing for the climate change that the Democrats believe in. So from our standard, it was the wrong thing. From the Democrat standard and the liberal standard and the climate change standard, it was still the wrong thing to do.
Yeah,
not only did he do the wrong thing, but he did the wrong thing across the entire political mindset. And then Missouri Cavalier, go learn to code. You can find another job somewhere else. Zero compassion.
Yeah. Hey, you know, here's the thing. The good news is, and we'll just try and stay positive on this Friday, for those that are blue collar workers, whether you're in Scranton or anywhere else, you should learn to code, because that's working out for all the folks at Google. And IBM.
We need this kind of positive comments on the show, Eric. Thank you so much for raising the level of positive rhetoric on the show.
I got my certificate that says I know how to code. I don't know how that works. I don't know if you get a certificate, but just follow along. I got my certificate. I learned to code. Look, I know how to code. As he's walking up to the Google building and all these people are walking out with pink slips. Yeah, how's that working, Biden?
You're up there. He said yesterday, finally, Americans are seeing relief. No, they're not.
No.
They're not seeing relief. That's like saying, okay, normally my expenses go up 1% a year, trying to do, you know, 1 to 1.5% a year, which basically has been inflation.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, they started going up 9% a year. Oh, man, I'm hurting. Okay, now they're only going up 6 to 7% a year. Oh, I'm feeling such relief.
Yeah.
Well, that 6% a year, when you look at some of the last figures, and I'm rounding off everything here, is based on the higher cost that you felt the year before.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no relief. And it's like, I can't understand it. Well, because you're lying to them. You're telling people, oh, you're feeling relief. And they're saying, no, we're not.
Well, why don't they respond to me anymore? And the Democrats.
Because you're completely tone deaf. You're callous. You killed some of the best union jobs in the country. You want to kill all the oil jobs. You want to kill. We can go back to Obama. Was it Obama?
Hillary, Obama, and
who else? Oh, Bernie. Bernie.
Yeah, Bernie. Yeah.
When in 1 week back in 2015.
Yeah.
Hillary announced she wanted to kill all the coal jobs.
Right.
Remember then? She had to do a roundtable where she brought a coal worker.
She had to bring in a coal worker.
Coal worker.
An actual coal worker. Afterwards,
after meeting with that coworker, she washed her hands for 2 hours.
She wanted to kill all the coal jobs. Then Bernie came in and wanted to kill all the trucking jobs. And then Obama, like 4 or 5 days later, and we said, Obama was like, oh, geez, they're all killing jobs. I haven't killed any jobs yet. Oh, okay, offshore drilling. Done. We need to get rid of those jobs, too. And it's like, oil, coal, trucking. Oh, yeah, we're the manufacturing party, aren't we? I mean, it's just,
by the way,
bizarre.
That would totally move the country forward, getting rid of those three sectors all at once. By the way, at the press conference, the little press event she had with that coal worker, the media asked Hillary, do you think coal workers should learn how to code? She said, no, no, don't learn how to do anything with computers, ever.
I don't want you to understand the concept
of it. Stay away from computers, especially mine.
Oh, my God. I just, does it ever end?
It doesn't. It really doesn't.
Does it ever?
And you know, it's still built, if you think about it, it is all built on this fantasy that the sun and the wind are just going to give us everything we need.
The wind is free. The sun is free. We can't see. Oh, you're an idiot.
Yeah, you're a moron.
Because we've seen where it's led us.
Well, I mean, this is the thing, is that even as we start to learn some people for the first time learning the lesson, what do you mean solar doesn't produce energy at night? Since when? You get with those solar workers, you get with a solar union and tell them they have to work at night. I wonder how many people in their mind, hey, if we can work at night, they can work at night. I mean, it is absolutely the most insane thing. It's worse than dealing with children. You know why? Children have the ability to learn. I've seen it happen. I'm not speaking for myself, but other children have learned. You can teach children things. But far too many people, adults in this public of ours, just decide that they're not going to learn. They can get burned, and they go back and touch that stove over and over and over. It's not a gas stove, though.
Yeah, the lies were flying yesterday, whether it was Hakeem Jeffries or the president yesterday about the economy. I mean, it's just, it's delusional. And, you know, maybe, yeah, they probably understand what's going to be happening here.
Yeah.
With the bad economic numbers, and they're trying to do whatever they can. But the fact is, you know, it's the same thing. I look at, you know, Biden constantly, and especially last couple of months, talk about how the economy is doing so well and inflation is down and the workers are finding relief. And that's not true. It really is just, I think, the continuing example of how I take top secret documents seriously.
Yeah.
And everybody knows that he doesn't.
Right.
It's just a continuation of it's so obvious. You can't lie to people about their own situation. You know, you can project out. You can project out, and people might buy it. Mm. You can say, look, if we increase the minimum wage to $50 an hour, you'll see a benefit 5 years from now.
Right.
Oh, I don't know if I'll see a benefit. I might be able to see a benefit. But when people are hurting and the prices are going up every single week, and you say, the Americans are seeing relief. Now, even if you sat there and everybody was getting $5,000 from the government this month, you might be able to say, you could get away with saying, oh, they're seeing relief this month. I mean, it's going to cause massive inflation down the road,
but
you're seeing relief this month. You can get away with it.
Right. Insane.
But it's like they take things that people are feeling right today that are as obvious, that I'll use the word, that are self-evident. They're self-evident to everybody. Everybody knows their situation, you know, unless they've got a new job and tripled their pay. Mm. Everybody knows that inflation is still going up.
Yeah.
And they haven't found relief yet. They're not getting it. And so when you lie to people about the economic situation that they're in, that they feel every single day, it's amazing. It really is. They are so tone deaf, so callous, so uncaring. And then they go,
oh, we don't understand why the blue-collar worker doesn't support the Democratic Party anymore. Oh, they think we don't care.
Because you don't!
At least he said that part out loud.
Yeah. Oh, that's great ammunition for the Republicans.
Oh, my gosh. Because we've been saying it. You know, conservatives, Republicans, they can say it. You know, we can say it. Because it's true. The party doesn't care. Now, you know, the way he phrased it is as if it implies they still care. Well, they think we don't care. Actually, they think you don't care because you don't care.
We've got a great show ahead. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Starting and charging system-related issues are one of the most common causes of winter breakdowns. So when your batteries talk, it's important you listen. Knowing the warning signs that could indicate your electrical system needs attention can help you avoid getting stuck out in the cold this winter. Your truck's inability to crank at the proper speed is the most obvious sign that a battery-related issue is present. If you experience any sluggishness when cranking your engine, get a full electrical system check from a trusted service provider. Continuing to crank a vehicle with low or inadequate voltage will damage the starter and can cost you uptime down the road.
This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Curley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Coming up on the show, National Archives tells former presidents and vice presidents, could you check to see if you've got any top secrets just laying around anywhere?
Yeah, just look around you.
One of the biggest problems still for Biden is having the classified documents while he was in the Senate. That was brought up quite a bit yesterday. The GDP positive, I think it was 2.9%, but the rest of the economic news is not. We'll get to that. It's Oscar time, so the liberal circular firing squad begins. Oh, I'm telling you, it's wonderful. It's just wonderful. It's a perfect liberal circular firing squad. The politics of the Border Patrol whipping non-scandal, because it never existed. We'll get to some of that. There was a Heritage Foundation. The emails being sent back and forth,
right,
showing the politics of it also. That coming up. Biden, we're sending tanks to Ukraine. Oh, sorry, we don't have the tanks. Never mind, maybe in a year or two.
My God. Only Biden could mess something like that up.
Before you promise the tanks,
shouldn't you check your tank inventory?
Maybe in a year or two.
We're going to send you four unicorns. Hold on, wait. Okay, I'm being told unicorns don't actually exist.
I mean, I couldn't believe that yesterday when I saw that.
It's
never mind, we don't have the tanks in inventory.
Yeah. How about some large SUVs? I mean, seriously. I mean,
way to project the power and influence of the United States.
Yeah.
We're going to send you 30-something tanks. Oh, the next date. Never mind. We don't have any.
We don't actually have any tanks, but
no tanks to spare.
Yeah. Well, anyway, good luck. only the Biden administration on something like that. Think about that, because all the analysts were focused on, okay, what does this mean? Does this mean we're getting closer to sending troops and blah, 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 blah? Are we not going to send troops? What does this mean for Putin? You know, I think still the Drudge headline is World War III.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because there wasn't a award show last night, so he put Putin as the headline.
Hollywood. There was no Hollywood award shows.
Right, yeah. And so, you know, that was basically the back and forth. You know, what is this going to mean? Could Putin lash out? Putin's laughing. He's laughing.
Yeah, I mean, that was just horrible. I mean, just...
No, I mean, it is just insanely incompetent. No one in that whole chain of command said, wait, before we promise them tanks, we should know that we don't have any tanks.
The Bonus Show.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. So the GDP up 2.9% in the fourth quarter. Remember, wasn't it less than a month ago we were talking about that the expectation was close to 4%, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was. I think it was somewhere between 3.5. Depending on who you were talking to, anywhere between I think 3.6 and 4.2.
Yeah, and that then we started seeing the bad economic news come in for December. So the thought was okay, because you had the months of October and November in there, we still may see positive growth, but it's December that really caused so much of the concern. It's interesting because you look at it. I'm looking from the Wall Street Journal. Businesses restocked inventories as supply chains eased, which accounted for 1.46% of GDP growth. Net exports also added 0.56, but neither is likely to be sustained. The other big lift to the GDP, and this is a problem, you know, when they revise the GDP, and it's something that we disagree with on the GDP, is the other big lift. One of the biggest lifts came from government spending,
right,
transfer payments,
yep,
and the movement of money is added to the GDP,
mm-hmm,
even though it's not the production of goods and services, as you and I've always talked about.
In fact, much of that was payroll. So
which increased 3.7% and contributed 0.64% to the 2.9%.
Yeah,
most of this was transfer payments and salaries, rather than defense or public works. The big cause for concern was the 6.7% fall in fixed private investment. Much of that was housing, minus 26.7% because of the interest rate. What the Fed giveth, the Fed now taketh away.
Yeah, right.
Capital expenditures also fell 3.7%. Signals that businesses are getting nervous and spending less on equipment that can boost worker productivity. Intellectual property investment is holding up better, but research and development declined last quarter. One culprit may be last year's expiration of the immediate expensing for research and development. The pullback in business investment amid higher interest rates and economic uncertainty has been evident in the ISM Purchasing Managers Index for some time. The economy can't live on consumption alone, and the sharp decline in the savings rate, 2.9% in the fourth quarter compared to 7.3% a year earlier, suggests that consumers may be running up credit cards to make ends meet or take that vacation they couldn't during the pandemic.
Mm.
But as savings decline, so will consumer spending.
So when you look at durable goods, it was pointed out by a number of analysts that Boeing received 250 orders. And actually, the net on that was there were 47 cancellations. So the net orders for Boeing was 203. You take that out of the equation, and durable goods declined.
Which, for the country,
right? Just,
that shows you the impact of orders, of those kind of orders.
Exactly. Yeah, which was very interesting to look at. But one of the things too from the report was that inventories are rising, and the spending did not come in at 2.9. It came in, consumer spending, at 2.1. So consumer spending slowing down inventories rising because that's unsold items is what that is. And then you take the Boeing orders out of durable goods, and what you have here is the all of the signs of a coming recession. And that doesn't even talk about the government spending that we just mentioned. So there are a number of things in this report where the data is essentially, this is why we have a problem with the way they changed the formulation on the GDP years ago. A number of items, and it is typical, especially during an election cycle, for the government to ramp up spending. Let's throw a bunch of money into it, and all right, you break that down. What is it? Are they actually producing anything? And you break it down and take the Boeing orders out of it, and where's durable goods? But I think right now, really, what catches my eye is the consumer spending at 2.1, the expected 2.9. And when you have inventories that are building, then clearly we're not buying. Now, I guess the good news is that as inventories build, this is something they have seen with retailers in recent months, in fact, as those inventories build on site, in store, at brick and mortar, they've got to get rid of them. I mean, they've got to, you know, they got to slash prices. So that's a good thing for the consumer.
The one thing, and this is pointed out, Fox Business pointed out its headline and article, GDP report reveals ominous Great Depression warning sign not seen since 1932. Mm. And they say that perhaps the most troubling is the drop in real disposable income, which fell over $1 trillion in 2022. For context, this is the second largest percentage drop in real disposable income ever, behind only 1932, the worst year of the Great Depression. To keep up with inflation, consumers are depleting their savings and burning through the stimulus checks they received during 2021. Credit card debt continues growing while savings plummeted $1.6 trillion last year, falling below 2009 levels.
This is what Jamie Dimon was looking at and warning of, saying that the money spent on COVID relief and savings essentially was going to be depleted, he believed, by mid-year this year. And we were looking at it going, okay, what is it? Obviously, as you know, the CEO of the of Chase Bank, they have that kind of data. But the question is what does he know about the behavior of that? Is he just looking at the trend? And that trend, by the way, is playing out. This is what it's showing.
Last year, I guess, the how much is the pain are the consumers feeling? The average family has lost about $6,000 in annual purchasing power under Biden because prices have risen so much faster than wages. Higher interest rates have increased annual borrowing costs by $1,400. Wow. So on everything that you do a year, just interest rates alone is costing the average family $1,400 a year. Now, would be, odds are it's not mortgage if it's, if you have a fixed rate, but if you don't, but that would be, you know, credit card debt, things like that.
Yeah. But I was happy yesterday. I secured on a loan, a 4% rate. I was buying some eggs, and the banker set up right there in the grocery store on the dairy aisle.
15 or 30 year?
I had to go 30.
Okay.
But, I'm not wealthy.
Higher interest 15. Rates have increased annual borrowing costs by $1,400, so that the average family effectively has $7,400 less in their annual budget.
Okay.
Is what the average, that's a lot. And so when they sit there and say Americans are, that's what we say when Biden was saying Americans are getting relief, and it's like,
yeah, not happening.
That seven, think about that in a year and a half, a year and 9 months, the average family, $7,400 in their annual budget.
And he seems shocked at, at the fact that people think they don't care.
Now, that's just the average. Someone trying to buy a medium price home today will have a monthly mortgage payment that is 80% higher than when Biden took office. That means spending an extra $9,500 a year for the same house.
Oy.
So there you go. Meanwhile, federal non-defense spending grew 11.2% in the fourth quarter. Mm. Another example of politicians feeding the federal budget while starving the family budget. And remember, that also because they spent so much money in the fourth quarter, that also relates to a better GDP number because it's not just
right.
GDP
right.
is not the production of goods and services. It is basically the movement of money.
Right.
Which doesn't necessarily mean a better, it can mean a better economy.
Right.
But it doesn't necessarily at all mean a better economy. And when you have that type of increase in spending by the government in the fourth quarter, that affects, as we brought you earlier, the other figures, GDP.
Right.
And we say economic growth, but it's really not, because what is economic growth? To me, and I think most people would think, economic growth is the fact that you are producing more goods and services, therefore creating more wealth.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Because that's how economic growth means I'm getting better. It just, we're just transferring more money. Well, no, that's not economic growth.
No. You know, and that's the thing, too, is that there was movement in the formulation of GDP that basically, as they changed it and shifted to the movement of money, it also included, like, planning for growth. Now, it's one thing, let's say, if a manufacturer decides, okay, we're going to expand our plant capacity, right? And we're going to buy the equipment. So they buy that equipment in that quarter. Well, okay, that's a real purchase, right? Even if it doesn't pan out for the type of growth that they're anticipating long term, that movement in buying that equipment is one thing. But in the movement of money, especially with the government, you're not producing wealth.
Right. Well,
that is not an expansion of wealth.
I would say, though, that buying the equipment, you have made a profit for another company, which then...
That was my point.
Right, right. You could include that,
that's a valid point. Right. That's a valid in the planning, because they moved a lot of categories and said, okay, if a company essentially has it in their plans to expand, well, for me, then that needs to be, okay, we're actually making movement. We're not just securing a loan. Beyond that, we're buying equipment or whatever it might be, purchasing property, and that type of planning, even if it doesn't pan out and realize actual profits later, is part of the GDP.
Let me give you a better example that you just gave earlier. Mm. You actually gave the example of why GDP is up so much. The one bright spot in the economy is orders for the planes.
Yeah.
They haven't been produced.
No, they have not.
The money hasn't even been transferred. There may be a deposit that they put down, but the entire money for all of those planes and the planes themselves has not been produced, yet that gets credited to the GDP now.
In fact,
is that economic growth now, or is that economic growth when those planes are delivered? To me, it's economic growth when those planes are completed, delivered, and the transfer of payments for those planes have been done.
I could see the purchasing of the raw materials and all of that to set up the manufacturing of those orders. I don't know how much of that part of it had been realized in that quarter.
Right. I'm just giving another example. Yeah,
if it's flat out orders on paper and the movement of money to facilitate those orders, then I have a lot more questions. But did it include the movement on the raw materials and everything else that's required? We think of the economy of a pencil, and everything in that chain of events in order to get those planes.
Right. Built. So the production of those parts to build the planes.
Right.
Once they're completed and sold, mm-hmm. is that when you should count the GDP or when the order goes in? And those are great questions. Mm-hmm. And how much of the GDP did they look at the GDP as the total cost of those planes? Let's say because each one is, I don't know what each one of those planes cost, probably close to $1 billion now. If that's $200 billion, does it all get credited? Those are the things. But when you start. When they made the movement, and this was it like 2013 or something when they did that, 2013 or 2014?
Yeah.
When they changed the way that they did it, and it was, well, we're going to count more of the movement of money, and we're like, eh, we actually judge the economy by the production of goods and services. But again, it's when you count it that can also affect it.
The net order was 203. The gross order was 250. There were 47 cancellations on that Boeing order. The gross order at 250 was valued at $22.5 billion, and then the net order on 203 valued at $19.9 billion. So if the problem is, I think ultimately, is how much movement is there and purchases in there in that fourth quarter in those orders.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carlin. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Top secrets. More of that coming
up. Top of the hour news is brought to you by Howes Products. Visit HowesProducts.com.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across the USA and around the world, we are Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Good morning. It's the Friday show. Download our Red Eye Radio app today. And you can listen when and where you wish to if you can't listen live overnight. All right. Let me see if I can. I've got it here. I happened to see this on YouTube yesterday. I was going through YouTube.
All right.
And I can't find the story on it, but it's a story out of CBS Miami. And it's basically that the contents of Pence classified documents has been revealed.
Well, the contents of the classified documents found in former Vice President Mike Pence's Indiana home have been revealed. The roughly 12 classified documents included materials described as background briefing memos that were prepared for Pence's foreign trips. One source said some of those classified documents were likely used to prepare Pence for foreign meetings while he was vice president, and they also may have been overlooked during the packaging process because they were tucked away into old trip binders. The FBI and other intelligence agencies are assessing whether any laws were broken here.
So that was from CBS Miami yesterday.
Right.
And then, I saw, Mike Lee yesterday, the story out there, he said, he explained that classified documents never remain with a senator. But also, Mike Lee yesterday was talking about the fact that, and others were, that they cannot get from, and Democrats are angry too, they cannot get from the Justice Department what those top secret documents are. What they were concerned about. And this is, again, you get to the House and Senate Intelligence Committee, and this is what we talked about yesterday, when we talk about top secrets, and we actually were talking to a gentleman, one of our listeners, who used to deal in top secrets. And we started talking about, the whole, because of the, Adam Schiff and Swalwell getting kicked out of the House Intelligence Committee by McCarthy because as we know, with Swalwell. He had a relationship with a Chinese spy. So, sorry, you're gone. You can't do it. I mean, there is no discussion on it. If you have, and when you're on the House and Senate Intelligence Committee, you have more than just a need to know because it's part of your job, because the House and Senate, that is the congressional representative, the people always have, and there are the representatives of the people, they always have a, you know, have a overseer authority over what the intelligence agencies are doing. So when you get up to, you know, you talked about yesterday, you were talking about the Gang of Eight, which includes, you know, the super top secrets. So you're talking about the congressional leaders and the leaders of the House Intelligence Committee basically are part of the Gang of Eight if there's something super top secret.
Right.
But the whole point is the representatives, Congress is a separate branch from the executive branch. So it just doesn't lie with the executive branch to completely control top secrets. You do have the other elected branch, which is the Congress. And so they're all screaming. And I was wondering, well, we're getting sources telling us what's in, you know, what the thing about Pence was. By the way, that diffuses that story a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, the Pence story. I mean, not that the Pence story at all related. Everybody really forgot about it.
Right.
You know, it's not.
But in the way that the liberal media went at it.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, no.
It disarms what they were doing.
Yeah. These were basically, you know, as the sources were saying. So they got, it was a source story they got it from.
Right.
Apparently, CBS Miami. Mm. But they were saying that, you know, this is about, you know, about notes that he was given and, you know, everything for things that had to do with his job. You know, nothing seemed to be out of place, you know, there, and it was packaged, you know, in it. But we found out at least what it was, and we know nothing about President Biden.
Right.
Nothing at all.
Right.
And you're wondering why, and the members of Congress and the House Intelligence Committees and even Democrats are saying, what's going on?
Yeah.
What, you know, you need to be able to tell us. We're Congress. You don't get to keep it. The Department of Justice does not, you know, is not the overseer of the intelligence agencies and the top secrets.
Right.
You know, they don't get the only judgment of it.
They're not the ultimate oversight.
Right. The oversight comes from, again, the representatives of the people through Congress.
Right.
Who make the laws. And so I just found it interesting that, okay, the Pence thing leaked. As you said, he...
That's because he turned himself in.
He turned himself in.
Turns out he handcuffed himself, which wasn't even necessary. he hired a 15-passenger van, the whole thing. Drove up to the Department of Justice, perp walked himself in. He even called the media, told him when it was going to happen.
So,
you know, this is the whole list of questions about the Biden documents. And, you know, this kind of, if you think about it, This, as you mentioned, this kind of disarms what the media was doing, the liberal media, mainstream media was doing with the Pence document find, because it essentially is like, okay, everything is out there in the open, right? It would tell you that at the very least, the Pence team is being fully proactive and transparent, right?
Mm-hmm.
It indicates that that might just be the case. For Biden, it's quite the opposite. I mean, there's your juxtaposition. And because, you know, former vice president, I mean, many of those documents that Biden had were from his years as vice president, and then former vice president, Pence. Well, there's no one making the case, you know, because early on when that news was breaking the other day, it was like, okay, well, they're all doing it. Well, I guess this whole thing is over. Well, no, it's not. All three of these cases are very different. The Trump case is much different than the Biden case, and we pointed all of that out. And if you didn't hear that, it's different, first of all, in that the chain of custody of those documents that were at Mar-a-Lago, that's known and was known by the National Archives. Now, the question came up by the liberal media, just speculative in nature. They were asking, well, who had access to, was he sharing secrets with the Saudis and everything else? And then that kind of died away because we were learning more. And it was like, okay, what was the back and forth? Well, the back and forth was really the negotiating tactics between the Trump team and the National Archives, and then ultimately the DOJ moves in with a warrant. Well, with Biden, we have no idea what the chain of custody is with those documents.
No.
In fact, we have good reason to believe that we know, in fact, that it was not proper chain of custody because... And it was not the inadvertent placement of these documents. Someone took the documents and separated them at the Wilmington home. I don't know what, you know, we still don't have all the details at the University of Pennsylvania, but we know at the very least the documents at the Wilmington home were separated because they were found in multiple places in
right.
the home.
And the, you know, when you look at it, say what you will, but Trump was very vocal.
Mm-hmm.
Trump didn't think about this. Neither Pence nor Trump said, we're not going to talk about it because there's an investigation going on. They talked about it bluntly.
Trump was vocal almost to a fault.
Yeah, he was to a fault.
Mm-hmm.
Because he said at first he declassified them, then couldn't provide evidence
of
it,
right,
and
true.
Then said the
exactly.
thing that, well, yeah. I can just declassify them in my mind right. if I want.
He should have been as vocal with his with his lawyers, right. we believe.
Exactly. But I mean, when he said that, I mean, that was the dumbest thing. Mm-hmm. That was the dumbest thing you could possibly ever say. I can declassify them in my mind. Mm-hmm. I don't have to tell you that they're being declassified.
Right.
Well,
right.
that's ridiculous. No.
Right.
There's a process for declassifying. You just don't get to do that. That hurt him. When he did that,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I'm saying, and he was telling you what he thinks. It's only the Biden, so for good or bad, whatever.
Right.
And there's still a lot we don't know about it. We don't know. Again, there seems to be because this would have leaked. There seems to be no intent for Trump there was no intent for him. You know, nefarious, you know, intent for him.
Right.
For example, as we heard afterwards, he was going to sell the secrets to the Saudis or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That came out. And then, you know, that just got blown out of the water. And I was wondering, it's like, well, why did he fight with it? You know, what was going on back and forth? What was this all about to begin with? And we brought up some of the weaknesses in Trump's defense. And one of them was the fact that when the National Archives asked for specific top secret documents. They, you know, they when the Trump lawyers gave them back to them, and they gave them everything back, you know, that they requested at that point. They never said these have been declassified.
Right.
They agreed with
right.
them basically by not disagreeing that these are top secret,
mm-hmm.
and the Trump, and that's a problem.
Yeah.
But the fact is, we know so much about it. It's only the Biden. Biden's the only administration. That is completely, we won't answer any questions. No questions on it, no questions on it, no questions on it. And we understand why, because of what you just said, how they were separated.
Mm-hmm.
And so that shows that there was an intent to distribute them in some way outside of a secure location. And when he says, I knew nothing about it, you know, I was surprised by it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be careful here because the White House, when Karine Jean-Pierre came out and said, well, no, he didn't know about it at all. And the reporter said, wait a minute, what do you mean? He's never said he didn't know about it at all. He just said he was surprised.
Right.
So that could be a bunch of things. I'm surprised that somebody found out I had them.
Exactly.
You know,
that's what we said from day one.
And she goes, oh, let me go back then. What I meant is he was surprised, he was surprised, he was surprised, he was surprised.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, wow.
Yeah.
This is really bad. And then, as we talked about when Pete Ducey asked her directly, is the president involved in a cover-up? And she didn't say no. Oh, that was horrible. But the biggest thing that has come out in the last week, and this was from the ones that they got last week, and Senator Mike Lee talked about it, this was the fact that there are top-secret documents of when he was in the Senate.
Mm.
And as he explained Thursday, he did a tweet storm on this, and he said the classified documents, quote, never remain with the senator after being viewed in the secured area known as SCIF, the Sensitive Compartmented Information Facility is what that is. These comments were in reference to Biden's classified documents scandal, with such materials were found by the president's attorneys and the Justice Department. The documents found in the last trove were reportedly from Biden's term as vice president in the Obama administration. Senators see classified documents in two ways, in a SCIF or to staff with high security clearance, brings a document to a senator's office in a locked case, opens a case long enough to read the document. No talking is allowed at all. You read the document, all the doors are closed. So the staff, the top secret staff, whatever they're called, comes in with the document, opens it up, you look at it, you don't get to copy it, you don't get to do anything. They close it, they walk out. You don't get to write notes or anything like that. The documents never remain with the senator. In the second scenario, the staffer with security clearance immediately puts the document back in the lock case and leaves, promptly returning the document to the SCIF. That's the problem. It is unknown how the documents traveled to Biden's home or to the heavily Chinese-funded Penn Biden Center. That's the problem. That's why Biden says so much worse. And everybody knows it. That's why even the Trump thing has died, and nobody's making that comparison. And that's all the Democrats have done over the last 5 years. Everything is compared to Trump.
Right.
You're not even making that comparison anymore, and the whole Pence thing is done. So this hope earlier in the week from Democrats said, oh, the Pence shows everything is the same. It's not the same.
When Dick Durbin can't defend the president, you know it's bad.
Yeah. Yep.
And as you mentioned when we played the audio from him on MSNBC on yesterday's show, you pointed out that he didn't even try and use the "yeah, but Trump" defense.
Yeah, and you, but you can't.
There's no way to do that.
And then that, not only that, the story's bigger because you've got three reports, as Breitbart notes here, from establishment media, not conservative media, indicate the White House and Justice Department agreed to hide the scandal from the American public.
Right.
Was it the New York Times that put the other
Washington Post?
No, was it the New York Times that did the story on was it or the Washington Post that the Justice Department members are furious at the Biden administration because they don't believe that they were straight with them either. That story I think we did yesterday. And so White House officials are reportedly suspicious about how Biden's classified document scandal was leaked to the press after only a select group of White House and Department of Justice officials knew about the White House violation. But, I mean, so there's so many aspects to this here, from the whole thing of it first coming out and then, you know, at the same time, while the Department of Justice is going after Trump, they know this bigger problem exists, and they wanted to hide it from the public, too.
Yeah.
So everybody's tainted across the board in this one.
Yeah, yeah. It's bad from the top down, no doubt.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Hi, I'm Jen Loomis, a transport safety expert at J.J. Keller, and I'm here to share a tip on winter weather driving. Before you even head out onto slippery roads or snowy conditions, you need to make sure your vehicle is ready to go. Some equipment is especially important when driving in winter. Ensure that the heater and defroster are working properly and that all exhaust system connections are secure. A loose connection could cause carbon monoxide to leak into the vehicle. Check to see that the cooling system is full and there is enough antifreeze. It's recommended that you use an antifreeze that is rated for negative 25 degrees Fahrenheit. Confirm that all lights are working properly and that they're clear of snow, ice, and dirt. Check to make sure the wiper blades are in good condition and that you have enough washer fluid in the reservoir. It's also important to use washer fluid that is rated for cold temperatures. Finally, check that battery cables are firmly connected and are not corroded. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This report is brought to you by Pilot Flying J and by Shell Rotella.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Check out all the latest.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. And when you look at a scandal, too, you just wonder that in any scandal, is there ever any good news? You know, is there anything that ever blunts the seriousness of a story or blunts the damage of a politician in a scandal? And now that this thing is, you know, going on 3 weeks, there hasn't been one bit of good news for Biden on this. Every day it gets worse. That's the political problem that he has. And once you get to this point, and especially since they've gone silent, the political problem is that well over 80% of the population, 80% of Americans, even 80% of Democrats believe that the Department of Justice should be investigating Biden on this.
Right.
You don't see numbers like that. You see numbers like that and you say, we're dead.
Yeah. Right. Politically.
Politically.
Yeah.
We have no credibility at all.
Right.
Available on the app and on our website, redeyeradioshow.com.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. You know, I have a little bit of a liberal circular firing squad that just came to my mind here before we came on the air.
Okay.
And that's because you saw Adam Schiff announce that he's wants to run for Dianne Feinstein's seat.
And by the way, she hasn't officially announced she's not running again.
No. No. But
he couldn't wait. Yeah.
And it's just the story that's out there. And we've talked about Adam Schiff and the things that that he has done before and why McCarthy was absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
And we're glad that he laid out that this isn't about revenge of any way. These people don't deserve, whether it was Swalwell, because, sorry, you cannot be privy to the top secrets of the nation and be in charge of intelligence agents, you know, and be an overseer, one of the top overseers of intelligence agencies and the top secrets of the country, when you've had a relationship with a Chinese spy.
Right.
Sorry, you can serve on other committees. You can't serve on this one. Absolutely right. Adam Schiff lied consistently and said that the intelligence that he saw showed that Trump colluded with the Russians, and it was more than circumstantial evidence.
Right.
And there were other things he did, but that was the main thing that we, if you've been a long time listening to the show, we have said when we found that out, and that was when the Inspector General, remember, did his report.
Right, right.
What would it have been, 2 years ago, December, I think it was, or was it 3 years ago? I can't remember. Time flies.
Mm.
But at that point, you realize, Adam Schiff lied. There was no intelligence that showed that Trump colluded with the Russians, and Adam Schiff continually lied to the American public about it. Well, sorry, when you do that, you're gone.
When you're the chairman of the Oversight Committee and you lie about the oversight to the American people,
right.
You have deliberately gone out of your way to not do oversight, to do the opposite of oversight.
Yep. And if you've listened to this show, you know that we're not just going along with what McCarthy said. In fact, when McCarthy said it the other day, we played the audio and said that's what we've been demanding all this time. And we told when it first came out in December that they were going to get kicked off, and the mainstream media kept saying, because of revenge, because of what they did to Republicans. We said, no, you got to make it clear why they're going. Because yep. If you pick these two people, it can only be for this reason. And Swalwell, it's got to be, sorry, you can't be privy to the top secrets of the United States and an oversight position of the intelligence agencies when you've had a relationship with a Chinese spy. Yeah, I'm sorry, man. I don't know where else to go with it.
Right.
And so the Democrats are trying to make a great deal of it, but really you don't see a lot of defense for Schiff and Swalwell because you can't.
No.
Swalwell should be on the Intelligence Committee. He had a relationship with a Chinese spy. Well, we should be able to have relationships with Chinese spies and Russian spies, too, and still be the overseer of the top secrets of the United States.
Yeah, it's not a problem.
Yeah. That's the ticket. Yeah. And so they really didn't get much movement. Schiff didn't get really any defense. In fact, I found this fascinating. A progressive group was quick to attack Representative Adam Schiff after he announced his bid for California's U.S. Senate seat on Thursday, though Schiff has sought to position himself as a fighter against MAGA extremists and a champion of progressive values, the group laid into him for his lack of accountability on former President Donald Trump. Quote, Adam Schiff plays the role of Trump antagonist on TV, but a recent book details how he stalled and undermined leaders trying to hold Trump accountable in Congress, and he never challenges the corporations or the Democratic establishment, said Adam Green, co-founder of the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, Thursday in a statement. Let's take the first part of it because I think that's the most important part. Adam Schiff plays a role of Trump antagonist on TV, but a recent book details how he stalled and undermined leaders trying to hold Trump accountable in Congress. You know why? He knew he was lying and would get caught.
Mm-hmm.
If you really went to hold Trump accountable,
you had information. Mm-hmm. Why would you hold that?
He held it because he knew he was lying.
Yep.
We always pointed out when he went on The View and they said, you have said that it's more than circumstantial evidence. What was this evidence that you saw? Give us just one bit of the evidence that Trump was colluding with the Russians. And so he said, okay, I'll tell you. And I'm expecting, whoa, is he going to give out some top secrets here or whatever? Wow. Is he going to talk about the fact that,
Scoop.
You know, whoopee scoop. And it's like, oh, obviously because of the
Trump Tower meeting. Mm-hmm.
Like that.
Yeah, with Trump Jr. and Veselnitskaya, yeah. The Trump lawyer, or the Russian lawyer. The entire thing, all that time, then we're led to believe was something we already knew about and had been vetted by the media.
Right. It wasn't top secret. And he was stating what he saw in the top secret documents. So we knew at that point, he can't defend it. So the only course that he had was to, if knowing that it was an absolute lie that he was promoting, he couldn't push it too hard. He could just push it hard enough where the politics against Trump at that time would continue to move against him. But he could never go to court. He could never testify in public. He could never articulate that Trump did these particular things because he had no evidence.
Right.
So he couldn't go full forward on it. But I don't think the liberals care about that. What they care about is he said as a political activist that they believe Schiff is, as a political activist, they were so enabled and emboldened by the fact that we think we've got Trump because of Schiff. And it was all a load of crap. So they feel so disappointed because they look at it and go, well, we can, you failed us. You failed us. We don't care if you lie, but if you lie, you need to lie effectively. And you didn't lie effectively in that situation, so you got to go. I think that's why they're ticked off.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that. You're a horrible liar.
Yeah.
By the way, we kind of said that along the way. Well, wait a minute. It was clear he was desperate to have an out, which is why he went on The View and then came up with this absurd thing about the Trump Tower meeting.
Right.
Why in the world would you? And it goes back to the question, because if I'm a liberal and I'm thinking, oh, man, Schiff has the goods on Trump. What, the second time he says it, I'm thinking, well, let's go. Come on. Out with it. Mm-hmm. It's the same approach as the January 6th committee. Yeah, toward the end in their final days. Oh, well, we're gonna do something. Why didn't you start with that? Because you put the committee together. Clearly you had something at the beginning. Why didn't you take action right away? Well, because you had nothing. That's the answer. And Adam Schiff had nothing. And that's why he couldn't deliver.
And that's the problem when you lie.
Yep.
The problem when you lie is eventually, you know, you can sit there and all the propaganda, even still hear a little bit about it now. Well, Liz Cheney was actually a hero for what she did because she gave up everything in Congress. For what?
For what?
What evidence did she bring forward?
Right.
She showed a lot of anger. She showed a lot of hatred towards Trump.
Mm-hmm. And ultimately
but
brought nothing.
But you and fine, you can hate Trump, you can dislike Trump, you can be enraged by Trump, but what you said is you had evidence that you had the evidence and would present the evidence that he was involved in a conspiracy of insurrection. You couldn't do that. And you couldn't do it when you were the so-called figurehead Republican, where nobody on your committee ever was involved in any type of or wished to be involved in any type of due process where any of the evidence or any of the allegations could ever be cross-examined. And you still couldn't do it. And that's a problem. So it's like everybody involved. You notice you hear nothing on that.
No.
Nobody's really talking. No. The occasional, Lynn Cheney was a hero. Yeah, like Lynn Cheney's going to be embraced by Democrats now.
It's got to be exhausting if you're a rank-and-file liberal Trump hater. How many times did they do that? Or they promised they had something on Trump?
Well, if you're not effective and you were the point person on it, you're going to have a lot of progressives say, okay, all right, you tried, but you blew it. Now we need somebody fresh and new that people don't debate their credibility at this point, but you've destroyed your credibility. And we know you're a political activist. You pretend you're not, but your credibility is gone. Nobody believes you. We need to find somebody new. You don't need to be in the Senate.
Well, it's one thing to lie. It's another thing when that lie carries a promise to deliver something that people are waiting on. And it wasn't ever going to deliver.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. I mean, politically, that's what happened. The fact that he lied as someone who was in charge of the oversight committee. And he lied about that oversight, which is the absolute opposite of oversight, is why he shouldn't ever serve on any committee. Which, by the way, in my mind, also includes the Senate.
But it was interesting to when I first saw this, and when we saw this, we said, oh, break this down. Why would the liberal group, okay, they're saying that he really didn't go after Trump. It's like, well, yeah, but he couldn't because he didn't have anything on Trump.
Yeah.
He lied about it.
Right.
And so I think they're looking at going, you know something? His usefulness is done.
Yeah.
He didn't get the job done. He didn't deliver. He's lost credibility, and we don't care that he lied. He didn't effectively lie. Time for somebody new. The last thing we want is to take somebody who has not been successful in lying about our political enemy and put them in a higher position where they have lost so much credibility already.
Right.
We need to get a new fresh face in there that people can view as credible for the next 10 years and continue our false political narrative, whatever that is.
Right.
But we need somebody new to carry the water. Mm-hmm. That's what's going on here. They know he's a liberal.
Yep.
He's just effectively can't communicate their false message anymore. Whatever that false message is, they know they're going to have more false messages they wish to communicate in the future. And he blew the big one big time.
Yeah, he did.
You just wonder if when he said that, because it really didn't go anywhere in The View. Remember when he said it? Didn't you figure that would have gone, you know, viral, that, oh.
Because it was something they all knew about.
Everybody knew about it, but he wasn't even criticized. It was like, it just laid there.
Yeah, it was just, oh, okay. I also wonder about the choice to run for Senate. Assuming Feinstein serves out what would be her final term, 24 does not look good for Democrats in the Senate.
Yeah, but not in Feinstein, not in California.
No. My point is that Schiff would, you know, the idea would be, well, I'll go over to the Senate and then I'll be on one of those committees. And right now they have power in the Senate.
Yeah.
But they won't after 24. If he thinks he's going to be on a committee, the liberal media has been lining out the long road of uphill battle from 24 on that the Democrats have in the Senate. So that's not going to play out. Maybe ranking member.
Odds are he'll still be in the minority. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And so yep. I don't know what the move is other than to just separate himself from Kevin McCarthy. I don't know.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. If you'd like to get in. So there you go. We've analyzed there in the last segment, you know, what the liberal group was actually saying. Hmm. Schiff is no longer effective,
right,
because he's lost credibility and they can't win. They know they can't win, the Kevin McCarthy argument that he doesn't deserve to be sitting here,
yeah,
because he lied. And nobody is, you notice, was there one Democrat that has stood up and said Andrew Schiff did not lie? Adam Schiff did not lie. Hmm. Has anybody defended him? Said, no, Adam Schiff didn't lie about Trump. I haven't seen one.
No, it's a good point. I haven't seen anybody do that.
Everybody knows it. And so he's no longer effective or useful to the Democratic Party. They didn't mind that he lied, maybe, but he wasn't effective in his lie.
Maybe that's the point of going to the Senate and running in the Senate. Well, time to get out, right? Yeah.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the planet, Earth, in case you were wondering.
Oh, yeah.
He's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome, or good morning.
Number one on Jupiter.
Download our app today, and you can listen when and where you want if you can't listen live overnight. All right. So we've had a couple of things this week where we went. One was Andrew McCarthy. Kevin McCarthy, when he explained about Adam Schiff and Swalwell, why they can't serve in the House Intelligence Committee. And, I mean, it was exactly how we said that he should do it. There was something else this week, too, that we hit. We were so happy. We went, wow, all right, they explained it exactly. There was something else. But this is another one. And this actually does not come from a politician. It comes from the author, J.K. Rowling.
Mm.
Did you see what she said in her tweet?
Mm.
This is exactly what we have stated. And on the liberal transgender activist movement that she's gotten a ton of criticism on, we have always said, don't defend, attack. if they want a name call, you can name call back. As we've said many times, you're transphobic. Well, you're a misogynist. You hate women. All right, let's play this game. You name call, we'll name call. You're femophobic. All right, now let's actually discuss the science behind it and reality. But if you want to do the name calling, we can be just as vicious in the name calling if that's the game that you wish to play. And we don't wish to play that game, but if they wish to play the game, we can throw words out that are probably more that we can back up, that the public will buy our argument using our label and our name calling better than yours. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to get down in the muck in order to defend it, because that's what they do. They name call first. And so we've always said that when, if you've been a long time listening to the show, well, you're transphobic. Well, fine. You're a misogynist and you're a femophobe. You hate women. Why do you hate women? Tell us why you hate women. Why do you believe a man should be able to dictate what a woman is? You think you can win that argument with me? You can't win that argument, and you know it. You can only use it when people are afraid because you attack them with a label, and then they back off, and they don't have the guts to argue with you. But if you get somebody out there who actually knows the facts and isn't afraid to debate, they can't win. They never could win. And so when I saw J.K. Rowling and what she wrote, let me get it. Here it is. I think she's listening to the show because it's almost. I'm reading this. I laughed when I saw this the other day. Men defining what a woman is, what woman should and shouldn't fear, what woman should and shouldn't say, what rights women should be fine with giving up, and, of course, what constitutes real misogyny. Get a bloody mirror. That's real misogyny looking right back at you. And I think that we were the first ones. I don't know anybody else, because we said this years ago, about attacking back at the liberal transgender activist movement, because this started a long time ago with, men wanting to play women's sports. This is at least a decade old.
Sure.
So we've been using these terms. And since they were the ones that were name calling, we said, fine, you want a name call? We'll name call back. And we'll explain our name calling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you're the ones that use phobic as if there's some fear. There's no fear. I don't fear any of that. I don't fear any person because of how they name call or because they use an offshoot of fear in their label against me. It doesn't mean I'm fearful. They throw that out. I can prove to them I'm not. And then I can prove to you exactly what they are. And she just did it right there. And so it's good to see, because she is one of, you know, she's one of the women that have taken a strong stand. The liberal feminist movement crumbled under what the man says. Think about that.
Right.
And maybe it doesn't have as much impact on a lot of, you know, on a lot of younger people, because really the feminist movement for the last couple of decades is not as strong as they were in the when I was, you know, growing up and became a teenager in the 60s and then in the 70s and went to college in that time when they really came to the forefront.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And
it wasn't. It hasn't been over the last decade or two as ever present as it was
right
then.
And when you realize how powerful of a force and how vocal they were in defending, you know, and I'm talking about liberal feminism.
Right.
What they said, these are our rights without question. And to watch them crumble, absolutely just crumble under the weight of what the man says was really one of the most incredible evolutions of a political movement that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
In fact, it may be the greatest crumble of a political movement based on what is, you know, was viewed as a as a minority group.
Mm-hmm.
And you think of everything. You think of the women's suffrage movement and voting and women coming into the workplace and
Title IX.
Title IX and everything that came about over the last 100 years in this country. Well, 150 years in this country.
Well, you know,
and to watch it crumble in a matter of a couple of years.
And the Obama administration, really, if you think about it, officially that was the moment that they were destroying Title IX. The joint edict.
Yeah.
Between the DOJ and the Department of Education, saying our interpretation of Title IX is this.
Yeah.
If a student identifies this as this, you must honor that. You can't make special arrangements, even travel arrangements, if they are on a team. You can't do any of that. This is our interpretation of Title IX. The translation is we're including the DOJ on this joint edict because you're violating what we believe are the rights of transgenders, and we are destroying, in turn, the rights of women. There is no way around that. You can't debate that. That is what happened and is still in play today. In fact, even more so, we said then at the end of the Obama administration when that joint edict came down, don't believe that if Republicans gain power, this is over. It's far from over.
And it's funny because we're really not in the habit of making predictions. You know, we're not.
But they are predictable.
No, but we said, and this was I know we were working together, but it was early on when we were working together and we saw this, and we said this will be the end of liberal feminism.
Yeah.
If liberal feminist, I said, because it's going to take liberal feminist to come up to truly defeat the liberal transgender activist movement. You're going to have some type of circular firing squad. And that just dissipated completely. And we know and we saw it. I mean, the end, the final beginning of the end was for the second when Trump became president. It was the second year when they had the second women's, protest, whatever they call it, the Women's Movement Day down there. And they split because the first year was all the women pink hats, which, you know.
Vagina hats.
Right. They represented vaginas, you know, and that's a woman with vagina. And, you know, that's how you know what a woman is.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second year, there was a huge split in the liberal women's movement.
Right.
Because, well, then if you wore a pink hat and was saying that a woman wore a vagina, then you were just a bigot.
Right.
And then everything fell. The liberal women's movement in this country just fell apart.
Yep.
Completely fell apart.
Right.
To where we go back, what was it, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, where Gloria Steinem finally came out and waved the white flag. Gloria Steinem, think about this. Submitted to the will, to the lies of a man.
You know, that second march, you could have been wearing a MAGA hat and been better received.
Might have been, yes. But think about it. Gloria Steinem submitted to the lie of a man.
Yeah.
Or men, whatever.
Right.
We're stating we can be a woman whenever.
Because a man says so.
Because a man says so. Gloria Steinem. For me, it's because I went through all of that, where Gloria Steinem was on every single, you know, Phil Donahue.
My gosh.
Phil Donahue, Oprah. I mean.
And the long line of clients and everything else.
Yeah.
And just, I mean, if you think about it. And imagine this. Imagine Gloria Steinem, because this is effectively what she's doing. Stepping up with a man who says he's a woman and wants to be on the team. after everything she did leading up to that.
For Title IX. Wanting Title IX and everything else. And she's like, oh, wow. Sorry, I know we fought for Title IX, but a man wishes to compete against a woman, and we will submit to the will of the man because...
The man says so.
And that's why whenever I talk about this, you may sense a certain, like, I can't believe this. And it's just because I went through all of it. I mean, in college and everything else and all you know, women's rights and 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 women's rights. A man says he wishes to play a women's sport. Oh, okay. Well, let's forget about it. The liberal women's movement is dead after 150 years in this country.
That's right.
When you actually put it and state it that way, it's mind-blowing.
No, it is.
And,
it is.
And they're completely quiet today.
Well, because their second march was all about the man.
Right. And now I will say this. I mean, now you finally have. I mean, J.K. Rowling's been one of those who has been consistent on this. And she's right, and she's not a bigot in any way, just like we're not a bigot anyway. We just I think National Review had an article saying – basically talking about the transgender movement in nature. Mm-hmm. You know, when did nature not matter anymore? Nature mattered, didn't matter anymore, and science didn't matter anymore when the man stated what the man wanted.
And the man told you to quit talking about science.
Right. The man told you to quit talking about science, and the liberal women's movement said, we must abide, we must listen to the man. There it is. The trans movement's long war with nature. Michael Brendan Doherty yesterday. Is nature our home or our oppressor?
That's a great, great, great point. But if you include the science, you're going to be threatened. That's dissent.
And then he writes, this is a great line here. There is an illusion in our political culture that our deepest debates could be resolved if only one side or the other would resile their private, inexpert opinions and submit to the facts, the experts, and the guidance of technocrats from the relevant fields. Mm. But in fact, our deepest debates are now beyond the experts.
How dare you bring an expert in?
And it goes through everything, you know, that where we are today, that it's only you just come up with a narrative and say, and here's what it is with the liberal transgender activist movement, is this is what it's boiled down to. Well, this is a narrative. Yeah, but it's not true and it's not science. Yeah, but if you don't agree to it and tell these people and celebrate with them, they might commit suicide. That's what the argument boils down to right now.
Right.
That it boils down to.
Right. So don't you dare bring in the facts.
Right. So the facts don't matter because you'll make this person feel sad and they might commit suicide.
Right.
That bluntly gets to the, you know, very quickly what their argument is.
Right. And we can't tell the truth because someone might feel something about it. And instead of dealing with that issue and having a conversation about the core of that issue, no, we have to change science instead.
Or whatever type of counseling you need to help these people realize what reality is.
Right. That's what the conversation would lead to. You would think you would want to have a conversation about mental health if you're on the left, and they don't.
No, they don't. They don't. No. They want you to lie. They want you to deny the truth instead of helping people who truly need help and guidance.
Right. Yep. You know, Hillary Clinton. Women vote how men tell them to vote. Remember that. Mrs. Clinton, your side says that we have to change science because the man says so. We have to do away with Title IX because the man says so.
Almost as good as Harris.
Yeah, exactly.
Remember it's... Because she was
when she dropped out in December of 2019, right. You know, well, this shows that Americans are racist. No, this is the primary.
Yeah,
this shows your party is racist.
Exactly. 866-90 Red Eye.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Progressive Commercial Insurance protects truck owners with specialized coverages for heavy trucks. Get a quote in as little as 5 minutes at ProgressiveCommercial.com.
Eric Harley here for my friends at Valley Chrome Plating. Drivers, are you looking to outshine everyone rolling down the road? Head to Valley Chrome Plating, your one-stop shop for...
Hi, guys. I really like listening to your show. I'm not surprised at all by the quick abandonment of the women's rights movement by the leftist liberals. Their foremost goal is really to create chaos. And the gender transgender issue creates more chaos than the women's rights do, because really women's rights have, in the greatest part, has been embraced by America. So the transgender issue is much more chaotic than the women's rights issue. And the more widespread the chaos becomes against traditional values, the more the leftist argument is for government control, which is really their goal. It's about liberal leftist government control.
Hmm. I guess the question would be, is promoting chaos, and thanks so much for your call, Ken, is promoting chaos for the sake of chaos an effective political strategy? When you look, for example, and when we say the women's movement, and I think, the women's movement hasn't always been a liberal movement. I want to make that clear. I talk about the liberal women's movement really over the last, maybe 40 years.
Yeah.
Whereas when you look at, the women's suffrage movement for the right to vote and things like that, the civil rights movement in this country, that everybody lives under the same constitutional rights, is something that was embraced by America. You know, there were protests and everything. Right. But it wasn't that eventually America disagreed with it or it defied science in some way.
Right.
In fact, if you look at the liberals, if you look at the women's movement, when you get to Title IX, what was Title IX saying? Title IX was saying that because when you think about it, because, you know, we live in a very male-centric society of sports, you know, because of the majority of men are built differently than the majority of women.
Mm-hmm.
Not all, but the majority are. There are different structures in men than there are in women. Muscle. We'll get into this more coming up. But Title IX was actually an acknowledgement of the differences between men and women.
Right.
And now the push is to say there are no differences.
Right.
Which, of course, there are.
The Vona Show.
And it's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 of Red Eye. Thanks to Ken in Pennsylvania, because you just got a bunch of stuff going through our minds here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you talked about the fact that the women's liberal women's movement crumbled under the transgender movement because, there really wasn't, when you look at it, you could cause much more chaos doing what, they're promoting, and that's what the left is out to do. And my response would be, well, okay, how far does chaos get you? When you looked at a lot of the great civil rights movements in this country, they were based on ensuring that people were protected under the Constitution of the United States. Where people started disagreeing then is when it got to the point, not equality of opportunity, but equality of outcome.
Right.
That there should be equality of outcome, and that it isn't a truly moral society unless you have equality of outcome, which of course is ridiculous because you have too many types of people out there. Equality of outcome is never going to be the case. And when you look at equality of outcome, it depends how you quantify the outcome, though, too. What's the outcome? Is the judgment purely money and jobs. And this is where you get, for example, and Jordan Peterson deals with this all the time. And the interesting thing, if you ever listen to Jordan Peterson talk about the difference between men and women, as you said, you know, men and women are more alike than dislike. But, you know, at the outer edges, that makes a difference, you know, that men are basic, you know, we're mostly alike because we're human beings. But the differences cause wide disparity at the end, you know, at the ends. For example, that's why you have many more men in prison. Because even though men most likely are more aggressive, there are still aggressive women out there that are just as aggressive, I guess if you look at the clinical psychology studies on it, that can be just as aggressive, but the majority are not. And therefore, that's why you have more men in prison.
Right.
And so when you look, though, at the women's movement in this country, the women's movement actually, you know, wanted, you know, the right to vote.
Hmm.
You know, the right not to be discriminated against in the workplace. That turned into equality of outcome. If women in all of their jobs, even though women tend to go to different jobs than men do, that don't pay as well, and because of pregnancy and that disruption, if you take the entire thing, men make more money, but men also work more hours, and men work the most dangerous jobs, which pay more, there is a recognition that there are differences between men and women, how slight they are if you look overall, but how they can affect, you know, who ends up doing what in a society.
Right.
It doesn't mean anybody is unequal to the other one. And so when you see that the women's movement in this country, got to the point of Title IX, and Title IX was saying, you know, that women's sports need to be funded like men's sports because women need that opportunity to do sport, not to become NBA players. You know, you see that, for example, the women's movement goes too far when they're screaming that the WNBA should be making the exact same amount of money as the NBA.
Yeah.
Well, that's based on revenue.
Right.
Sex has nothing to do with it. It's what's the revenue coming in? Well, that shows the discrimination. It may show how people discriminate when it comes to sports because they look at maybe the NBA where men are more athletic, can jump higher, are bigger, are faster, and that's what people want to see. Does that mean there's discrimination against women in general, and that is a all-encompassing thing? No.
Well, it's because it comes down to entertainment, and entertainment is about getting an audience to view it.
Right, and so
it's like saying the Go-Go's should be as wealthy as the Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't work that way. Now, there may be, again, you know, this is the problem where you get into the equal pay and blah, 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 blah. I'll never forget, what's his name? Oh, the guy that's in Taken.
Yes.
Being asked if women should get equal pay. Liam Neeson.
Yeah.
Should women receive equal pay? I believe so. Are you willing to give up some of your salaries on a movie? No! In the way, I mean, because he responded like, no!
Well, but when you find out when women actually work, especially when it comes to college-educated jobs, women make more money.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And they did the survey that women, you know, from the time they become professionals outside of college till the time they get pregnant.
Right.
They make actually have a higher salary than men do. Mm-hmm. And when Jordan Peterson points all this stuff, I mean, it drives it. But again, he's not trying to justify a particular narrative, and neither am I.
Mm-hmm.
What is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it comes to biology, I can't change it. I'm not trying to change that.
Right.
I just acknowledging or observing what is different than saying I have a preconceived narrative that I'm going to defend no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you had the women's movement that clearly with Title IX, is amazing too. It was a man, Obama, who really pushed the change in that.
Well, no, that's it. It right. was his administration.
Right. Exactly. So, I mean, it's amazing because he was viewed as the great liberator, and he is the one that really got this movement started, this misogynist movement that exist in the liberal transgender activist movement to ensure that women don't have opportunity that Title IX gave them. And said, no, women should be able to play sports, too, in their youth. Then when you get to be an adult, hey, it's whatever happens.
Yeah, right.
But when they're young and when they're growing, developing, women should be able to play sports, too, and should be able to play against each other. It was never viewed that women were going to play against men. Now, there are sports, for example, where if you can do it, if you can perform as a man, you're in. One of them is the PGA, golf. The LPGA is a ladies' professional golf association. The PGA is a professional golf association. If you're a woman and you can do it, you can go on the PGA tour.
Yeah. Right.
And would I be against it? Absolutely. But not for the reason you think. I'm just jealous of a woman who could hit a ball a lot further than I am, whether she plays for the PGA or not. No, it would be great.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's on equal terms and she can do it, my, can you imagine? You think Tiger Woods was popular? You get a woman that could actually be able to, but most can't. In fact, so far, no one has been able to do that
right
on the women's tour.
Right.
When Annika played, a lot of people were excited. She played right here at Colonial. Mm. Now, she didn't play from the same tees. And she got a sponsor exemption, but it was great to see her out there. And if a woman could do it, it doesn't matter whether I like it or not. By the way, I would like it, but it doesn't matter whether I like it or not. It's the reality that if you can cut it, you can cut it.
I wouldn't like it at all.
Why not?
I don't like golf. I don't care who's playing.
Well, you know, this is it. I mean, this is kind of bigotry that you're showing here towards golf.
I'm an anti-golfer.
I have a golf lesson later on today, my second golf lesson with my new golf coach.
All right, then.
I was able to get that in today.
Hey, tell them the story about the boys' swimming team, would you?
I think so.
Why don't you throw that in?
By the way, I did get an email from a woman saying, I hate you. I go, why? She said, when you were talking about that story, I don't even know how we ever got to it this week, about when I was high school, and I got... Think about this. I got more emails on that than any other email on any topic this week. Response on that, talking about when I was in high school and the boy swam naked. And we actually looked at the history of it, and it's because of you didn't bring your own bathing suit when you went to school if they had a pool, like in the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
They gave you like these wool suits, and the boys wool, whatever, the stuff from the wool got in the filtration system, so the boys swam naked.
Yeah,
and
instead of improving the filtration system, everybody get naked.
Everybody get naked, right. And so she didn't know if she could ever forgive me for saying, hey, Wolf Blitzer went to my high school a couple of years before I did, and so he swam naked too. And she said, the theater of the mind for the split second was too much to handle.
Little known fact, when he was 13, he had a full beard.
Well, that's what she was saying. She goes, I pictured him with the adult head.
Yeah, exactly. Gray hair and all. Yeah.
I said, well, mission accomplished. We accomplished what we wanted
theater
to.
Of mind. Yeah, it's not really the theater of mind you want, but we did get to theater of mind.
Yes. But the women's women recognized that there were differences between men and women there.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's, okay. A man can be a woman whenever a woman wants, or whenever a man wants, and a woman can be a man whenever a woman wants, and there is no biological difference. Well, everybody knows that's ridiculous. It's like where the civil rights movement has gone from judging a person from the content of their character, where the left now wishes to judge all people by groups. So anti-racism actually becomes racism. That's what people object to. You're not going to convince people once they have come to the conclusion that you judge a person by the content of their character, and you've convinced us, a society has now accepted that as what our society is, even based on the original Constitution about individuality and autonomy and the limits of the government on you and freedom. You're not going to reverse people once they get to that point. There's going to be pushback when you say, oh, no, by the way, if you say the content of the character, you judge a person by the content of their character, and you judge them as an autonomous human being, as an individual, where the content of their character is what counts,
Mm-hmm.
Well, then that's white supremacy.
Right.
You're not going to convince people of that.
Well, it's and this is where they want this to go. The left wants this to be a brand new civil rights movement, because they look at the civil rights movement and then what happened after that. And what did you have? You had the blossoming of modern day liberalism. But politically, you had a lot of people basically saying, OK, that was a good thing. Right. Look at the things that were accomplished, and mm-hmm. what they need this to be, what they want this to be, is a brand new civil rights movement. Well, it's not the same.
No, it's not.
It's not the same at all. And you look at the what we have pointed out in the dynamics of, you know, the rights and any of the groups that were recognized in the civil rights movement. Those protected groups, as a society, we chose those protected. We looked and recognized those protected groups, and now are saying anybody can belong to a protected group simply by saying so. Then you don't have protected groups.
And when you believe
it's all gone.
And when you believe a civil rights movement is based on, number one, something that isn't scientifically true, but then it's based on the fact that in order for you to get the opportunity, somebody else must be marginalized and must lose that opportunity. The woman must lose that opportunity because the man states something that is biologically untrue. Mm-hmm. You're not going to convince people.
No, you're not.
It's just not. It's not going to happen.
You're not going to win.
And the only reason they've been successful in it is through intimidation. We'll destroy your life if you don't go along with it. And well, eventually, as we said, we fought back from the very beginning, and we were never on the defensive. We were aggressive. And when they said, people would say, you guys are transphobic, fine, you're a femophobe. Mm-hmm. You hate women. Mm-hmm. You're a misogynist. And we didn't sit there and have to defend anything. We went after them for their horrendous bigotry and their denial of basic human nature and science.
You know, and where they are losing more and more, you see it in pop culture. They're losing the people. Not just stand-up comedians, and it goes far beyond Dave Chappelle now.
Yeah, it does.
But it is a number of people that liberals adored in pop culture to basically kind of carry the water of their agenda. And then all of a sudden, they're not. And they're not on board with this movement. It doesn't come out of hate. It comes out of a very simple reckoning that we're not going to just hand somebody rights because they say that this is what they are. We're not going to change science and say that we must teach this now as the new science, which is exactly where they're headed.
So J.K. Rowling coming out and bringing up the whole misogyny of the liberal transgender activist movement. Perfect.
Yeah, no, I thought that was great. And by the way, some other liberal Hollywood types jumping on board with that.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carlin. I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90 Red Eye. If you'd like to chat, coming up, Oscar time.
Mm.
So the liberal circular firing squad, Hollywood firing squad, begins. The politics of the Border Patrol whippings non-scandal.
Yeah,
and more coming up.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.
Hey, that's part one of our show. Don't miss the rest. Click part two on our website, redeyeradioshow.com, or Red Eye Radio phone app to hear the rest of the show. And thanks for listening to Red Eye Radio.
The Bigger Pockets portfolio of podcasts are worthy of your investment.
We're having a real conversation as real estate investors.
New episodes available every day.
It's important to buy where it makes money and not necessarily where you want to travel to.
Bigger Pockets, On the Market, Rookie Real Estate, or Money Podcast.
The purpose of flipping is to create more cash so then you can reinvest into other types of properties.
The Bigger Pockets podcast on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Guest star Sarah Carter as Alicia Baker.
Although I didn't really work with her a lot. But Tom did, and they had some real big smoochy scenes.
Yeah. Should we talk about that?
Could there be any more sex? What was a three-page makeout scene that just kept going? Good Lord. We get it. They have chemistry.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.